It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Leo Laporte here with Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, and Alex Lindsay. We'll take one last look at the Apple spaceship campus before all the drones are banned. We'll talk about AR kit and how you might be able to use an Oculus Rift with your Macintosh. It's all ahead next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 567, recorded Tuesday, July 18th, 2017. Don't fly over my spaceship. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. And by WordPress. WordPress powers 28% of all the websites, including mine. Get 15% off your new website at wordpress.com/MacBreak. That's wordpress.com/MacBreak. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code MacBreak to save 20% on any order. Time for MacBreak Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And we got the whole team, the whole gang together from iMore.com in the chaud et humide Montréal. You look like it's humid there. You look like you just came out of the shower. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Hi, Renee.
I think it's seldom noted that Montreal gets as hot as in the summer as it gets cold in winter. So we go from like minus 40 to plus 40. I don't know what the math is for that, but it's 100% humidity because it's an island. So now I have like humid hair or cloud hair. I don't know.
It's cute.
It's just my fingers are barely touch ID-able anymore.
Andy Iannocco, Chicago Sun-Times.
Renee, at what day during the year can you finally like get the frozen bodies out of the bus hoardings? Is that
equinox,
like a traditional
equinox,
thing?
There you go. And then they melt. You got one day a year window.
By the way, congratulations on the sale of the Chicago Sun-Times. I hope you got a big chunk of change for that.
Ooh. I hope so too.
I don't know if that will change things or not, but hey, at least it's still around.
I'm just the amount of office supplies that I've stolen during my visits there mean that I do own a part of the business, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that if there's a sale, I'm owed at least 30, 40 grand.
You own a piece of the rock, as they say.
I mean, I'm talking about whole boxes of pens. I'm not talking about, ooh, can I borrow that pen? I'm talking about a door is open, it's a supply closet, I got a backpack.
Also with us from his lair, is this the new lair or the old lair?
This is the old one. Still my office.
Still in the old lair, Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Core, who looks like got a little sun. Looks like a little sunburn there.
Yeah, I'm peeling. The worst part was that I burnt it on Saturday, and I told my wife, I said, the biggest problem with this is that on Mac break, I'm going to be peeling. Like, I just know the evolution.
It's going to be red.
It's going to hurt on Sunday. It's going to be red on Monday. It's going to be peeling on Tuesday morning, and Leo's going to talk about the fact that I burnt my forehead again.
Oh, you did it again.
I went to... Yeah, Stinson Beach is like the worst place in the world to go on a Saturday.
Oh, nice, I love Stinson
Beach. On a Saturday. Yeah. Oh, no, on a Wednesday, it's awesome. On a Saturday, not so much. It's basically everyone's piled on top of each other. Yeah. And I should have taken a picture. I meant to say, like, this is what it looks like when everyone goes, oh my gosh, there's too many people on the beach, but I spent 4 hours driving 3 miles to get here. So I'm going to.
They actually closed Stinson on warm weekends in the summertime. Because there's so many people there, they'll actually say, you can't go there now.
Oh. I think they tried, and we just kept on.
Unless you're the governor.
My wife is very hard, too.
Yeah, did you see Chris Christie while you were there?
I did. Yeah, exactly. There was a special area that was all empty, and that was where Chris Christie.
Are we experiencing a new renaissance of, like, idiot bad politicians? Because I grew up in an era where they were all very, very smart and very, very clever, and they covered up their tracks so well that it took years to figure out what they were up to.
I think the press got better at seeing it. I don't think it was.
I don't know. I think back to John Daly in Chicago. My favorite from Rhode Island, the great Buddy Cianci, mayor of Providence.
We started this with Rob Ford, so on behalf of everyone,
In Toronto. I mean, I think that this is a long-standing tradition going back to Boss Tweed and earlier.
But Alex has a good point. That picture of Chris Christie was the result of a journalist thinking, you know what? I think that Christie is enough of an idiot that he will close all the beaches but take his own family out there. Why don't we just rent a helicopter?
Just on the off chance.
Make sure the iPhone is charged up.
Was it just a drone? I mean, you know. Like,
sure. It wasn't neither a helicopter nor a drone. It was a Cessna. Like, it was a fixed-wing aircraft. And the poor guy, I mean, this is from the New Jersey Star-Ledger. He hung out of the aircraft risking life and limb for like an hour with long lenses. And yeah, you're right.
And it was worth it.
Kudos to him for thinking, I wonder if the governor's out.
He could have.
He's exactly that Cessna, but it's going to be worth it.
Oh, it was weird. Oh, I think he'll get a Pulitzer for it. Hey, I want to thank. What's your name? I didn't get your name. Sean and Lauren from. They're visiting us from Honolulu. Sean is a genius.
Woo!
And he brought me. This has never been opened. I was the first to open it when the Royal Hawaiian Mall. Was this the first Apple Store in Hawaii? Third Apple Store in Hawaii opened up. They made special Apple t-shirts that say Royal Hawaiian. Is that cool or what? I'm wearing that to your next barbecue, Alex.
Yes.
Your name tag now.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome? Thank you, Sean. That is really nice of you. Shirt. Yeah.
Do they still make like Apple opening day shirts? For the Boston Apple Store, they made like Green Monster Red Sox themed
shirts. Oh, that's a great idea, isn't it?
I don't know if the
Union Square had them.
Yeah.
He also brought me, he and his wife brought me a ton of Hawaiian goodies.
Did I just get bring you spam?
And you weren't married? Spam? Girlfriend, sorry. I got quite a look.
Comfort.
How about this? These are pizza toppings. Kimchi, mochi crunch, and nori.
Mm.
Popcorn. Did I say pizza? Popcorn toppings. Yeah, you can put it on pizza.
That's a chopped basket.
But why would you when Hawaiian pizza is close to perfect already? Hurricane toppings. Pizza. Yeah, I know.
We have Hawaiian pizza in Quebec. It's got pineapple on it.
Yeah, pineapple and ham.
Yeah.
But you'll all be happy to know the guy who invented it is now dead.
He's from Chicago.
Was he dead or was he killed?
No, he just died.
Okay.
And which I shouldn't make fun of that.
Hawaiian pizza is the Phil Collins of pizzas. I don't understand why people hate. I can understand why people don't like it. I just don't understand why people hate it.
It's the Nickelback of pizzas. Get it right.
I went to Hong Kong and the Canadian pizza all had Thousand Islands dressing instead of tomato sauce on it, which we don't do here. So it's regionalisms that are funny.
That sounds foul.
Yes, Pizza Hut, Canadian pizza in Hong Kong. Do not order it. Do not order it.
All right, we could talk about some more serious things.
Vide.
What is the lead?
I'm sorry, listeners, but this is the topics you get in the middle of July.
There's
on
nothing.
Apple News. There's unless
so Australia.
Unless somebody leaves something in a bar again. Well, this is what we got.
Australia's fine Prime Minister Turnbull has proposed new encryption laws that will compel tech companies to give police and intelligence agencies access to encrypted information from suspected terrorists and criminals. And of course, as we all know, if a company's to do that, that means encryption has to be broken. Apple says we're going to get together with the Attorney General in Australia to discuss this ban on end-to-end encryption. Attorney General George Brandis says he'll hold talks with Apple this week in a bid to get cooperation.
Because that works so well.
Now, of course, the British Investigatory Powers Act, or colloquially known as the Snoopers Charter, does something similar. And apparently these Australian laws will be modeled on that. Apple I'm sure they don't like it, but I don't know if they've gone to meet with Theresa May or anything about it.
She's got bigger problems.
But it means that Apple. Well, now the good news from Apple's point of view is iCloud. They have the key. They can hand it over, and they have. There's some debate over whether Apple's Messages program. I think it is not trust no one encryption. I believe Apple's Messages And the reason is you can, for instance, back up messages and restore it on a new phone, things like
you
that.
You can pull it from the iCloud backup, but I don't believe you can pull it from the iMessage server.
So what is that? To me, that sounds like messages is probably just like iCloud. Somebody at Apple has the key. I'm sure protecting it carefully, but...
Because they just changed that. So iOS 11, it changes because now they do a sync with iMessage, which they didn't do before. Before, every device was treated almost as a unique device and would get a unique copy of that message, which is why if you turn on a device, it wouldn't always be the same. And it would try to deliver that message for, I think, 10 days. And if it couldn't, you would just never get that message on that device because Apple didn't want to keep them on their servers.
Now
they're doing a sync where it's still end-to-end encrypted, but those blobs go through a sync server. And Apple doesn't know what those blobs are. They're just pseudo-random blobs to them. But they know that those are associated with your ID and that blob should go to all of your devices.
So that's,
they still don't have.
That's where the problem begins because Apple can't hand over those messages then.
Yes, correct. They prefer that. They prefer not to have any knowledge of anything that we do on their servers and delete anything they do have as quickly as possible.
Exactly right.
It just makes things so much simpler if you say, well, subpoena what we have nothing. So we will happily deal with any subpoena you give us for personal data.
However, these laws say tech companies must provide now this is interesting, and I have to read these carefully. If all they have to do is provide the message encrypted, then that's fine. If they have to hand over the decrypted version of the message, that would be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, like even look at services like Backblaze, where you have the option of generating your own encryption key client side before you upload anything to their servers. They would have to try to crack it the way any other external hacker would have to try to crack it.
So we know that Apple has the keys to iCloud.
To iCloud backup, they can. I believe in the past they've been able to decrypt iCloud backups for people, which depending on what you choose to backup, everyone can choose different things in their settings to backup.
Well,
there will be an amount of data in there.
But we know it partly because when the FBI said, help us crack the smartphone, the iPhone in the San Bernardino terrorism case, Apple said, you dope. If you had just let the iPhone back up to iCloud, we could have given you everything.
Or the phone would have had everything. I mean, the simplest thing was for them not to do the reset and just gone into the phone.
Yeah, they changed the iCloud password.
Yeah.
And therein lied their mistake. Apple is cooperating with China, though, in this regard. They're setting up a China data center.
Well, it doesn't look like they're not giving them necessarily any data in that data center. They're simply putting it there. I think that there is obviously concerns of, or good politics anyway, of saying that you have to put the servers in our country because if the servers are in the United States, then everything is in question, which, you know, is not necessarily, it's more of a political dig against.
Well, a lot of countries do this. This is not unusual to say,
Russia's done it.
If you're in business in our country,
they want their data on their servers.
It should be in our country. However, one has to suspect that the Chinese government, they require a Chinese company work with Apple to do this.
Yeah.
And that's, cloud services must be operated by Chinese companies. So they're going with GCBD, the Guizhou Cloud Big Data Industry Company Limited. And one suspects the Chinese government has a way of
owned and operated by
saying, hey, GCBD, what's in that?
Yeah, I mean, the security concerns on their end are genuine, given what's going on in the United States right now. But it's also concerned about how the Chinese government uses internet services and data to maintain control over its people. It's just a given that anytime there is anything on the internet that they think is going to create trouble, unrest, or make things untidy, as one expert put it to me, they have no problems with shutting it down. And it's not an evil thing. It's not a fist raising thing. It's that, well, of course you do that. Why do you not do that? That's the attitude of the people who control those services. So it does take a different tone in China, because now you have, guess what? We have access to the power switch for all of your cloud services. If we decide that something is getting out of hand and we want to make sure that nobody can transact data across these domains, we can just simply shut off this service. You need to think six steps ahead in personal privacy and, again, how governments use the internet to control and sometimes abuse its own people when you see a story like this.
There's another side to it too, which is, and we talked about this when it comes to backups, is that security experts will tell you that backups should always be fail secure. And if anything goes wrong, your data should be unrecoverable, because then it's unrecoverable by anybody. And a lot of backup specialists will tell you, you don't want that. You want all this stuff to be fail safe so that if anything goes wrong, you can recover and restore it. And Apple has some services that are fail secure, like the one-to-one iMessage service. Even they can't read those messages, but increasingly they had problems with people losing all their photos. And so Photos, I believe now, is fail safe, where there's some ability to recover. And that might be what the iCloud backup is as well. And I think we should just have the option, like Backblaze, to create our own password if we want.
And I have to admit that for me, I have things in two different worlds. So there are definitely things that are fail secure, and then there are things that are fail safe. Fail safe are things I'm really not worried about. People, you know, like, but it's like things that I really want to keep, like my photos of my kids or other things like that that are really important to me. And if I want to, if something goes wrong, I do want to be able to get to those. Whereas a lot of my documents are in fail secure. If I'd rather lose them than have them leak. And so so those are, you know, I think you can also think about different services and different processes and different password processes for different data. And I think that as users, we have to start getting really smart about this. I mean, this is it's not just governments that we have to worry about. Obviously, it's hackers and, you know, everything else that you want to really think about how you're managing your data all the time.
Yeah, we talked about this actually coincidentally earlier today on iOS Today. We did a show on cloud services because of the new file browser in iOS 11, which lets you have arbitrary cloud servers as part of your file service, which is great. And I made that point, not as I think not as well as you and Renee are making it, but merely that you have to understand what the policies are of each cloud provider. And while it's convenient, perhaps, to use iCloud or Dropbox, understand that they are what did you call that? Fail safe.
Yeah.
And that stuff that you really want to keep private, you might want to consider using a Trust No One service. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a lot of this is the way to think about it, is when you think about fail safe and fail secure, is what your door will do when you lose electricity. You know, so that
does it pop open or does it lock? Does it lock permanently?
Fail safe is it's going to come open. Fail secure means it's going to be shut. And you think about like what data sits inside of that, you know, that you may never see again if there was a, you know, that, something to kind of
This is another reason to contemplate buying a NAS or network attached storage. It allows you to kind of create your own private version of Dropbox and private versions of cloud services. Right now, I've been using that a lot for. I haven't switched over from Dropbox to my NAS, but the fact that I have apps on my, I can access these files through any computer with a web browser. I've got Synology has provided really good iOS apps and Android apps. I can access these files with the simplicity of a modern interface. If you're concerned about that sort of stuff and you want the ability to, if you've got data that's so private and so valuable that you need the ability to nuke it from orbit and know that nobody can get, if I can't get at this, nobody can get at this, you might want to consider getting a NAS and sort of shifting a lot of your workflow onto servers that you actually own.
Yeah, that's what I recommended. But it's more complicated than that because if law enforcement went to Apple, for instance, and said, let me see all of Leo's data, Apple would be forced to comply. They might fight it, but they'd be forced ultimately to comply. And depending on the nature of it, they could be compelled. They could be gagged. They could be compelled not to reveal that information. So I wouldn't know. At least if law enforcement came to me and said, we want to see what's on your NAS, I'd know it, right? But they still could do that.
The old BlackBerry versus Microsoft argument that they only had to compromise one NOC to get everyone's information, where with Exchange, they had to get every server from every company.
I guess that's really more to be the thing to be worried about is a phishing expedition where everybody's stuff is, then they're after you. I mean, if they're after you, that's another matter. Then there's another point, which somebody in the chat room brought up. You could have everything securely stored on a NAS or maybe use one of these Trust No One services like Treasure It. But the passwords in LastPass and LastPass could be compromised and you'd be all over everything.
Yep.
So there's there's ways and ways.
And the nightmare solution is they just accumulate all your data and then at some point in the future decide they want to get you and sift back through years of data to see what they can find.
Well, and as stuff is being transported, maybe they're cracking it there. I mean, there's plenty of places along the way.
Yeah, encryption over time. Maybe they can't crack it now, but in 5 years they can and they have the data still.
Yeah, that's increasingly troubling given the exponential potential of artificial intelligence, a lot of what makes things secure is the idea that, well, we know this is safe because it is mathematically impossible for this to be cracked. But then all you need is one revolution to say, oh, by the way, we now have quantum computing. We can do things 1,000 times faster with the same hardware. And now this is the sort of computer that maybe can't be owned by an individual, but can be owned by a sufficiently well-financed organization. And now remember the time when we all thought that our bicycle locks with those round keys were really secure. And then we started wondering, gee, why do I keep finding these Bic pens with like these sort of splayed out ends of it just on the sidewalks all the time? It's because, oh, the people who steal bikes realize that you can just jab a Bic pen in there and twist it around and it would eventually pop the thing open. All that the bad people are very well motivated to keep things working to their advantage. The other problem is that, getting back to Australia, that's why you're sort of worried that when a government, maybe even for completely altruistic reasons, says that we need to have access, there needs to be a way for us to get in there if there is a sufficiently important danger to the community that with data that is locked up someplace. Again, there are going to be bad people that are going to say, great, it looks, instead of there is a steel door behind a cement wall that can be opened now. And so it's going to be our job to figure out how to open it. And when they do that, they're not going to try to claim a $50,000 bounty on a bug report. They are going to start selling this tool to people who do very, very extremely bad things. So that's why, in principle, whenever a government creates a policy that says that you do not have the right to secure your own data and make sure that it is secured against eavesdropping by your own standards, that becomes a huge problem in which basic infrastructure starts to fail, I think.
What do you guys use? What do you recommend if you wanted some sort of fail-secure solution? Andy, you recommend having it at home. That's expensive and complicated for a lot of people.
And another thing to do is Disk Utility lets you create essentially virtual drives that you can totally encrypt without encrypting your entire hard drive. So create a volume, mount it when you need it, unmount it when you don't need it, and that's what I trust for stuff that I need to carry from place to place. That I need the ability to make sure that it would be really, really hard to get into that stuff, but it's not a particularly easy problem to solve.
Now, if you don't want the complexity, you could use a service, and there are services that are trust no one. You guys have any recommendations?
I think even the popular ones, like all of the popular ones now let you create client-side encryption keys, so you encrypt on your end before uploading to their servers. And for most people, it's just easier to let the service do the work. It's sort of like iCloud versus Time Machine even,
right?
Where it's an incredibly mainstream-friendly solution. As long as you're encrypting it with good encryption on your end and you have the keys and you maintain them, then they're just big binary blobs.
You could continue to use iCloud or Dropbox or something and then have a special part of it that is locally encrypted. So even though you're storing it on iCloud, it can't be decrypted by anybody except you because only you have the keys. That's probably
again, until such time that those keys, but you should be re-encrypting those every so often.
There's Spider Oak. We've mentioned this before. This is a trust no one, or sometimes they call it zero knowledge solution. They also have messaging. I didn't realize. So that's an interesting way to do it. Somebody asked me on the radio show yesterday about Treasure It. So I've been taking a look at that. Treasorit. This one is based in Switzerland. Don't know if that makes a difference or not. They said with the Swiss privacy policies. Any others that we might want to mention? I like your idea, which is to just use whatever you use, but have some have been encrypted before you put it online.
Yeah, that's
anything that's on the internet is at risk.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I do with disk images on Dropbox. I do have like sort of a secure USB drive, so to speak, that's inside Dropbox.
Yeah,
you need a balance because, like, if Andy's house gets hit by a comet, his backup goes with it. So you want at least something that's offsite. Well,
I have the not all of us have luxury, but I have the luxury of having an office and home, and so I keep important copies of the disk of the secure data on both home and office.
Right.
And again, if someone took the drive, they'd get nothing. You know, it's not it's just the data. And then the stuff that is, I don't put anything online that I don't care what they say about the encryption. I don't put anything online. I don't even post privately. I mean, like, I don't post anything, on Facebook or anything else, just to friends. Or I remember getting really, what was the service that we used to Path that we
a bunch of us got into. And they get sold to a Chinese company.
when I started getting really interested in Path and I started posting things, because I almost, you know, I don't rarely post anything of my kids, and I started posting them, and I immediately decided I'm getting too comfortable with this. I don't want to be thinking that this is going to be safe, and immediately stopped and just walked away from it. And so like when I post Twitter or Facebook, I don't, well, Twitter definitely, but even Facebook, I don't do anything that I would assume. I don't post anything that I don't think that everyone's going to read. And I do it publicly more as a mindset than anything else. But when I put data online, I also think of the same thing.
All right. Well, there's solutions there. I like Andy. I like Andy's idea of having an encrypted USB key or USB drive that you can then put on Dropbox. If you really want to, if you spend money and want to do it right, I think what you're doing, Alex, is probably the most sophisticated, but it requires a great expense because you're going to have duplicate NASs and that kind of thing.
It just depends on how valuable your data is.
Yeah.
It's not. Also, when we think about all the things we spend money on, we pile up how much money we spend on Starbucks or anything else. I mean, it all adds up eventually to a lot of money, and it just depends on what, you know, when you lose that. I mean, I've had a lot of friends, and I've lost big sections of, I mean, in the past, big sections of things I really wish I hadn't.
Right.
Yeah. Well, also remember that whenever anybody's giving you advice about backup strategies and security strategies, it really is about, it really is like advice about health and fitness and diet. We're telling you about things that we do that work for us. They may not work for you. The idea is just to create a plan that you can live with day to day to day, not something that you keep up with for 3 weeks. And then week four, you decide, I really don't want to have to keep typing in my password. I'm just going to copy this file outside of my secure area and put it just in the main Dropbox. And then you do another file, then another file, and then it's been 8 months since you've even touched your secure area. So absolutely, just realize that these technologies are out there. It's okay if you introduce better security and backup practices little by little, so long as it's something that you can keep doing every day for the rest of your life. Eventually, 10 years from now, you will find that you did totally revolutionize and improve the safety of your entire world without ever undergoing a major revolution.
Yeah. There you go, everybody. We managed to waste 15 minutes on this subject. Half an hour. That's good. Well, we're almost there. Three more stories and we're out of here. No, I think that's all very important stuff. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com, Andy Inako, Chicago Sun-Times, and of course, Alex Lindsay. Always a pleasure to have all three of you from the Pixel Corps. Our show today brought to you by Texture. I love the idea of Texture. Texture is a kind of like a Netflix for magazines, and it is the best thing. It is the best food to feed your iPad ever, but you can also use it on any device. Access the world's most popular magazines, 200 of them, for less than $10 a month. It is fantastic. Actually, they've even got a better offer now, it looks like. This is great. Go to texture.com/twit. You could try it free, and then you get 3 more months for another $10. So it's a really great way to see all of the amazing magazines. Now, I love magazines. I'm a big magazine fan. And I love the idea that I can read all these magazines without having to subscribe or buy them and get all that coffee table clutter and all of that. They also have some great curation. So if you don't have to know what magazines you want to look at to be able to peruse the magazines. Look at all these titles. National Geographic. Actually, National Geographic is an example of something that really looks great, better on your iPad than it does in print, because you don't have that disadvantage of having to screen it, and that really can ruin print pictures. The images look fantastic on your iPad or your tablet. National Geographic Kids, National Geographic Little Kids, National Geographic Traveler as well. You get all kinds of great magazines. Rolling Stone, Mother Jones, 17, Shutterbug, Sailing World. I like to read the sailing magazines. I like to fantasize. I also like the cooking magazines. There's so many great cooking magazines. Cooking Light, Clean Eating, just some really great stuff. Plus, stuff that you might say, like for me, you want to read, but you wouldn't want to subscribe to. I love reading The Hollywood Reporter, Variety, Billboard, all the trade magazines from the entertainment industry. But I probably wouldn't subscribe. They're very expensive to subscribe. Texture lets you read them all. I want you to visit texture.com. Best of 2016, according to Apple, in the App Store. Visit texture.com/twit and get a great free trial for 2 weeks. Over 200 magazines on your tablet. And when I travel, I love having Texture. Lisa actually has a Texture subscription, but we can put it on 5 devices, so we share it. You could favorite a magazine. It'll download automatically. Every page that's in the newsstand issue, plus back issues, plus bonus features like video, texture.com/twit. Before you go on your summer break, why don't you do that free trial? We are talking about the Apple World and AR kit. Of course, we're all very excited about. We're going to start seeing more demos as developers play with it. And then, of course, in the fall, when we get iOS 11 and the new iPhone, maybe, we might see even more amazing stuff. But there's just here's a new demo. This is actually using the Vive. So this is Vive, AR kit, and Unity. And here, I don't know what's going on. It's a magic bean that's doing some drawing, but this is, so explain this to me. You can use the Vive with AR kit?
I guess they're just pumping in the movement data to feed the AR kit. What we call it, a projection. I don't know how, I don't know what the terminology is for all this stuff yet. There's a virtual AR kit being who's being directed by the input from the VR, device.
So they're actually, if you look closely, the Vive is connected to a Macintosh.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that.
It looks like they're using the, I think they're using the dev kit, the eGPU dev kit. I think that's what that black box was next to the
display. Oh, I get it.
Display.
Okay. So Apple's latest iMacs include VR support once High Sierra comes out, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, we've been testing it. It doesn't do very much yet, but it's great. Like, you can do all the development stuff. It doesn't do much in terms of like playing games or anything yet, but you can do a lot of the developer stuff.
Steam has a Steam VR software development kit for the Mac, which means you're going to see, that's for Vive. That means you're going to see a lot more stuff.
Yeah, I think Oculus might have jumped a little too soon away from the Mac, because of course it started there. And what you're seeing there with the mixed reality, XR is what they're starting to call it, because you have AR, VR, and XR, and XR is kind of the mixed reality look. And that's kind of a simpler version of it because you don't need green screen. So there's two different ways to do that. Of course, you have being able to take the CG elements and throw them in front of people, or of course, put people in front of green screen or a variety of other ways and put them into a VR scene so you can kind of see what they're looking at. And so that was a very effective version of it. Of course, as soon as it came out, it went like wildfire through our company. Because, I mean, we have a whole team right now that's just working on AR.
Here's an interesting thing, because you remember that Palmer Luckey, I think it was, said, it's a shame Apple doesn't make computers good enough to power VR. Maybe they do, because as I mentioned, you can use Steam and this new dev kit with AR kit. And there's support there for the Oculus Rift. In fact, I'm looking at a comment on the Mac Rumors site that says, can confirm Oculus Rift works in the Steam VR beta with an eGPU developer's kit connected to a Mac running High Sierra beta. eGPU, that was that box you were talking about, Renee.
Yeah.
That's an external NVIDIA processor, right?
It comes with AMD Radeon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it comes with a Radeon processor. Now, I don't think NVIDIA, we tried with the 1080 card and there's just drivers just don't support this configuration yet. But I'm sure that, time heals all compatibilities. So hopefully that'll change. But you plug it in over Thunderbolt 3 right into the MacBook Pro because it's got the 3 ports. It'll power it at the same time. You've got the card in there and it just offloads. It detects it. That was one of the big things that previously no Mac understood that GPUs could come and go. It just didn't, it had no way of handling that. So now it has all this messaging to say new GPU discovered, GPU been disconnected.
Nice.
You plug it in, it presents itself, it shows itself in system diagnostics, and then you can hit that the way you would hit any additional GPU in the system.
And Thunderbolt 3, what has, is it 40 gigabits throughput? What's the throughput on?
Yeah, and some people have gotten it at least to recognize it over Thunderbolt 2 using an adapter. So that might just be for a best case scenario. I'm not sure what they can do with it yet. But some people have got it running on Thunderbolt 2.
So you
as well.
Can get a high-end graphics card, put it in the eGPU.
Yep.
If you have High Sierra on a Thunderbolt 3 Mac, which is the new iMac or the MacBook Pro,
yep.
that will be sufficient. But you do need
the
High
iMac
Sierra.
Doesn't need it. The iMac has a good, like if you have a modern iMac, it has a high, yeah, it has a good enough card. You can get the eGPU if you want some flexibility or you want to start doing other stuff with it too. So it'll work with it. But I believe the highest end of the new iMac is pretty good on its own.
Yeah, obviously the Pro will open up a lot of opportunities there as far as that goes.
We have an eGPU here for some reason. I think we're doing something for the new screensavers. We're testing or something. How are they expensive eGPUs?
It's a developer kit right now. There will be commercial versions available, but you have to have a registered developer account with Apple to order one. And I think it's around, I forget what it is, American, but it's around $600. That's with the enclosure, with the cable.
But not with the card.
Yeah, the card comes too.
Yeah. So no third party makes? No.
They will.
Okay.
Well, they will. It's just developers.
Akitio, which makes a, oh, that's a. Yeah, no, this is an eGPU.
Yeah, no, that's part of what Thunderbolt 3 was designed to address. That's becoming really big in Windows and Windows gaming. So it's another indication of how a lot of the best stuff coming out of WWDC this year were these little things that will make everything so much more awesome over the next year or two. I was on the radio a couple of weeks after, and the host asked me, so what was the most exciting thing to come out of the developer conference? And they thought they were setting me up to talk about HomePod. And I said, oh, well, VR kit, and now you can use external GPUs. And I got this really, really blank expression. I had to like say, but that was literally the case. It's like the things that are ARKit, all of these demos that are coming out from developers that are just making their first apps to figure out, just taking ARKit through its paces. This is such a brilliant mode of any new resource or any new technology. All these demos, they don't reflect a product or a business plan that people are working towards. It's wouldn't that be a cool idea if I could simply walk through a space with my camera held out, and then every picture I take at that moment will simply hover in space and go and revisit that second of this moment. Or what if I could not just paint in 3D, but have an animated figure so I could see this figure painting this 3D sculpture, and on and on and on. I mean, YouTube is probably the greatest ambassador for the next version of iOS than any video that Apple has ever produced. It really has gotten me super excited about what an iPhone will be able to do in September or October this year when ARKit apps are finally released into the public.
And we've been finding, and we're not ready to talk too much publicly about what we're doing just yet, but the results are stunning. I mean, the phones are amazingly powerful. I mean, both on the Android side as well as the iOS side, that you're seeing, being able to process over 1 million polygons at a time, which means that we can do a lot of detail, being able to put whole environments, in front of you and people. we had someone dancing on our table yesterday. And it was just like a person, it looked like there was a person standing in front of you, that's like 3 feet high or 2 feet high, standing on your table dancing and in 3D. You can walk around them and stuff like that. And so there's going to be a lot of, when it comes to education, when it comes to some entertainment, but I think that the education market, the training market, the exploring locations and things is going to be very very exciting. As far as what can be done, the technology, even in its very rough form, is working extremely well on a variety of platforms. Whether it's and the great thing for all of us is that everyone's competing pretty rigorously. So you've got Facebook and Google and Apple, all, and Microsoft, all pushing pretty hard on.
To Andy's point, it really is the small things. Like you look at AR and VR, and then you also add in something like Metal 2, where they deliberately do everything they can to get the CPU out of the way and just let developers hit that GPU as hard as they can. And things like Xcode, where you have per eye debugging for things like VR, so that you can go through the entire pipeline. They've got a lot of very clever things there to make it an attractive environment, at least for people who want to develop on the Mac.
Well, and all of those little things are really the problem. I don't know if folks are old enough to remember, I think we are, but when you used to play Marathon, you had to restart your Mac and hold down the shift key so that you could start without any extensions on, or you'd lose frames. And frame rate is really a big issue with AR and VR, but with AR, that losing a frame or two really takes you out of the moment. And so being able to get that processing and make sure that it's not chugging through some automatic operation while you're trying to look at what you're looking at, I think is an issue, you know. And I think that when we think about the possibilities, one of the things that we've been playing with is, you know, you could, I think there's going to be some point in time when you're on your Amazon app and you're going to be able to click on, you know, I want to see this object, and that object, you know, you just pop, just hold your phone up and you can walk around the object that you want to buy instead of looking at a couple photos.
And why can't I just grab it, Alex? Why can't I just grab it out of the screen and have it?
Yeah, just want it. Exactly. But I mean, I think that you're gonna be able to really look at it in the level of detail that you'll be able to look at it is way better than those photos. And you'll be able to get up right up to it and look at the things that you want to look at, possibly rotate it around. And I don't think that future is very far away. So I'm not saying I've seen anything, but I'm just saying that it's, I think that future is probably, we're experimenting with it internally. Every time you experiment with something with AR, you immediately think of the 10 other things you can use it for, you know? And so, because as soon as you see it, you're like, oh, okay. And then this is the next thing we want to do. And this is the next thing we want to do.
Give me an example though, of something useful. 10 in our chat room says, I've seen dozens of these AR kit demos now. They're cool. We'll all agree to that. But I don't find them to be the future of anything. Give me an example of something concrete that we're going to be doing in 3 years or 2 years.
Well, okay.
I'll start with Alex, and then Andy, you got one.
So a couple things. One is that, let's say you're putting together your IKEA furniture, like getting rid of the paper in the IKEA
announced that,
great,
right? Yeah.
Super excited. Well, IKEA's right now, what they've announced is being able to visualize the furniture in your house.
Right. Okay.
But the far more useful use of AR is getting rid of those stupid pieces of paper that come with it and moving it to a platform that basically says, okay, I can show me the piece. Okay. That's the right piece. You know, like literally show me the piece. That's the right piece. These pieces come together.
That would be a lot better than the little headless man and the thing. It's horrible.
You know, it's like, you know, and you always end up with six extra screws and you don't know whether they packed them that way or whether you forgot something. And so there you go.
So for learning.
And all kinds of learning, you know, being able to look at, you know, something that is gone, you know, that there's ruins and being able to see what it looked like when it was at its height. You know, those are the kind of things that you'll be able to do. That's going to actually be hard on iOS in the immediate future, depending on what happens in the final build. Cause we haven't, you know, seen enough of it, but you know, that's something that you can do more easily on the Android platform right now with what they're doing, because the trackers are better. But we don't know what the iPhone 8 is going to have, and that could definitely change a lot of the stuff.
All right, Andy, your turn. What would you give me an example of something that's useful in augmented reality?
I thought you had something. No, I do. But the larger point that I wanted to make is that this is like looking at Twitter and saying, how are people going? What possible use is 140 characters? Right. And it's a new form of communication. This is what augmented reality really is. It's a way of communicating information to people in a way that was unavailable before this technology came along. So you're talking about stuff like I've called AAA. And they can't send it. My car is broken down. I call AAA, and they say that, well, okay, we as soon as we get a truck out there is 90 minutes. But would you like to talk to a diagnostic person over the phone? So yes, absolutely. Do you have our AAA app? Yes. Okay. Turn on the AR feature. Pop up the hood, and just let us look at your engine, and it will simply say, oh, okay. Well, first thing I want you to do is I've highlighted the battery to your right. It's now colored pink, and there's a word called battery on top of it. I want you to take a look at that, give me a closer look at that right there. Or stuff like, I don't know why the Wi-Fi in my house is going all screwy. So I can, the setup app on Google Home or Evo or whatever now says, okay, just if you want to see what the signal strength is like, just turn on the AR feature. And now I can simply walk around and I can see pulsating rays of where the Wi-Fi is and where the Wi-Fi isn't. We're not talking about one specific feature. We're talking about, here is a way to communicate something visually that was inaccessible before. So it is something as simple as, I've used this example before. I've taken a step out of the subway. I know that I have to go two blocks either that way. I know I'm on 7th Avenue. I don't know whether I need to go that way or that way. So I simply activate Apple Maps. And since there's a Pokemon with a big twirling sign saying, this way, you idiot. See, this way. got.
I do think location.
Just follow me. I'll lead you there.
I do think location and maps are a good use of augmented reality. And Apple, I guess it was Google, did a demonstration of you hold up your phone and on a street, and it'll show you. You can look at information about the shops you're seeing, right. Stuff like
and
you that. Can,
and there, another one of these really cool AR kit demos was someone has a developer has hooked up Strava data. So when at the end of a ride, they can actually point their iPhone at their kitchen countertop or at their coffee table, and they will see a 3D representation of the part of the city that they rode around in. And now here is a line showing them where they went, and also what the stress levels and heart rate levels and exertion levels and how fast they were turning the pedals, and they can actually visualize that in a way and understand it in a way that they couldn't understand that data before. I mean, I always think about how envious I am of kids taking math classes today, where they have visualization tools that let them simply play with cosines and tangents, let them play with four-dimensional transform. Right.
There's
not just that, but it's like, but don't just visualize that here is a sine wave. A sine wave looks like this. It's like, no, here it is. If you want to push it and pull it this way and basically throw this complication into it and see what happens to that trigonometry function. It's communication. It's not a feature. And it's going to be like Twitter, where it will seem kind of ridiculous. I tweeted last night. I had this idea that I want one of the first $1 million AR kit apps is going to be miniature golf courses like Pokemon Go, where I can go in the middle of a park and hold up my phone and I will see this awesome, like Game of Thrones death windmill hole. and it'll be like two or three people like with their phones on selfie sticks acting as like putters. They can see the tap while in a gallery of like people who are just like watching through their phones and seeing the mountain suddenly leap out of the bushes and then simply eviscerate the ball and kill the whatever it is. I don't subscribe to HBO, but it's going to seem like these silly things to begin with until people figure out how they can best use it. And now it's basically, if you want a breaking news alert to hit the greatest number of people in the most efficient way, you're going to tweet that out. You're not necessarily going to post it on the blog, or at least you're going to use Twitter to tell you about a thing that's been posted on a blog or in the Washington Post.
Actually, there is a timely story because Google has revived Glass. Glass isn't exactly augmented reality because
I wouldn't say that they revived it. I think that it never went away. I think that it's just finally reaching.
They have a new version. Let's put it that way. Google Glass 2.0.
Like a personal display, right? Is that the nomenclature?
Yeah, because you're not looking at the world with stuff superimposed on it. You have a screen over your right eyebrow that you can look at. Although it's easily viewed. The new Glass 2.0 is available to business only. It's really designed for industrial use. I think you can wear it with prescription glasses if you want. I guess the idea is exactly as you were talking about, that you might use this on the factory floor or somewhere where you needed to look at a manual.
Now that I think of it, I think one of the things about Google Glass was like it sort of preceded the Amazon Echo, the idea of I want to have a computer with an interface that I don't have to touch anything. I don't have to take my visual focus off anything. I can simply say something and the computer does it. In the case of Google Glass, it chiefly uses that screen to deliver any visual information that it can't deliver to you via audio. Google has always been maintaining Google Glass. They shut it off to another Alphabet company, but they thought, okay, now it's going to be about enterprise rather than convincing regular people to wear these on their faces every day.
Here's a factory. This is from Wired magazine. Here's a factory on the right. Diane von Furstenberg in the first iteration of Glass, which really wasn't a fashion setter on the right, a worker at a factory in just above the Iowa state line in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, who says, you know, he leaves these at home. They look like OSHA safety glasses. He begins his day by saying, okay, Glass, proceed. And he uses this to do whatever he's doing, which looks like prepare gear for shipping. So I think that that's kind of interesting. This is an industrial use for it. And Google obviously decided that's the way to go.
Well, there's so much stuff that you're spending time looking down at a screen and then looking up, right, and looking down, looking up.
Yeah.
And when you think about the AR and all of the stuff that we're seeing Apple do right now and Google do right now, it's all, I think Google thinks about it a lot because they've got glass in the workforce. But you know, this is all going to end up on glasses. You know, we're going to all have something, or anybody who wants to do this will have something that is more heads up display and giving you a lot of information about what you're. So the stuff that we're doing right now with iOS with ARKit. Apple, I mean, I'd be blown away if within 5 years Apple doesn't have its own glasses with, you know, and it's throwing that stuff up in front of you,
right,
and getting that. And you can, you know, get to a point where we've done stuff where we've done camera training remotely with Google Glass. Where,
oh, have you? How interesting.
Yeah, so you both have glass on and you see what the person's doing. You go like, no. And you have this, if you have the same camera on your side, you go, no, touch this button, you know, and turn this, you know, and when the two of them match, it's kind of magical. You're like, I can't believe I'm training someone, you know, 10,000 miles away with, you know, over Wi-Fi, you know, and this was, and so that, and that was in the early iterations of it. And with us experimenting, but it, you know, we're trying to get on the list to play with.
Yeah, they call this EE or Enterprise Edition. Actually, this is an agricultural equipment company. That picture's from AGCO. But according to Stephen Levy, again, writing in Wired Magazine, Glass, the Enterprise Edition, has been quietly in use in dozens of workplaces over the last 2 years, including GE, Boeing, DHL, and Volkswagen. It sounds like in industrial environments that this is a whole different thing.
These are all environments where people need their hands for other things, and they need access, right, to information. So
and something, frankly, that is AR might even be more useful. But you see how much harder AR is to do.
Well,
because the glass is just a screen, and it's triggered by your voice. AR would require camera to see what's going on, a computer to understand what's going on, process it, and then put information on top of it. That's a lot harder thing to do.
Well, I'm glad we're seeing so many different cuts at this idea. We're seeing Oculus, where it is, we are going to create an entirely new environment that may or may not integrate what's really happening around you. We've got what Microsoft is doing with Oculus, that's saying that we are going to be able to seamlessly introduce digital constructs,
HoloLens,
screens.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, HoloLens. Sorry. Yeah. And so you'll still be wearing a Windows computer, but you're seeing what you're really seeing, but we're adding stuff to it, right, selectively. You've got glass, which is, we're not adding anything. We're just putting a screen up here so that if there's information that a computer can and should convey to you, you can see it without really taking your hands off of what you're doing. And then we're seeing stuff like what Apple is doing and what's happening on other platforms, but not nearly as well as what Apple's doing, which is, it's okay for someone to take a phone out of their pocket and hold it up, because we've, as anybody who's walked down a city street and nearly gotten brained by a pedestrian, people are okay with walking around and looking at a screen. And also, people are going to be buying an iPhone anyway, or people already have an iPhone that can do ARKit. This is such a wonderful way to give people access to the benefits of augmented reality without asking them to make that risk, saying, please give us $600. We promise you that you won't wind up keeping this thing in a drawer.
I wonder, though, if one of the limiting factors is people's unwillingness to wear bulky headgear. Carson just threw up a picture of the Mira, which we've actually had on the new screensavers. The Mira Prism, which is an augmented reality that uses your iPhone and the iPhone camera. But I really wonder, I mean, these things make you look dopey. Google Glass failed in public. if they look like Ray-Bans, yeah, but remember, you got to put a lot of processing power in there. I think one of the reasons Microsoft has said we're not going to really offer HoloLens till 2019 is because battery and processor cannot be miniaturized to the point where it could easily fit in normal-looking glasses.
I think that, you know, Apple may be taking an approach that is closer to using your phone as your outboard computer. So the display information is really being figured out here, but the you need an iPhone to actually run the glasses.
Oh, that wouldn't be so bad if I had, you know, right, in other words, something like AirPods except in your glasses, and then that's connected to an iPhone in your pocket.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be so bad. Yeah.
Go ahead. My idea is that, what if Apple were to create a product called AirPods with video, where there is just like there's a little pipe going down this way that has the antenna and the microphone, there's also a little pipe going that way that is like having a, almost like having just like a golf pencil behind your ear. So it's not, it is, it can see what you're seeing, but it doesn't necessarily put a screen in front of your eye. So you have to wear something, something dorky like Google Glass or HoloLens, but it will say, okay, you are on 7th Avenue, you're facing north, you need to turn right at the next stop, or the store you're looking for is three blocks that way, or facial recognition that this person is your uncle Shlomo that you haven't seen in 3 years. Oh, by the way, he insulted your hat the last time you saw him. Try not to. Don't give him anything he can use against you. That's
Shlomo.
AirPods can do some of that now. Like AirPods could tell you turn left, go straight. I mean, AR is going to be a multi-sensory experience.
I think that the brilliance of the 20 teens, like if multi-touch was the brilliant change of GUI in the first decade of the 2000s, the idea of a computer that I can control without looking at anything, without touching anything, all the different ways you can express and articulate that, be it a smart home speaker, be it a wearable thing with a camera on it, the idea that I can go about my day doing whatever I want, I don't have to use a piece of glass as my go-between myself and the real world anymore. To get to your question from a minute ago, I think that people aren't going to be willing to put these things on their faces until there is something that is so good and they just don't want to be without it. And I don't think that that's something that AR can provide right now. I do still use my Google Glass, believe it or not. There are times where I really do want to be able to have a camera like right here to take pictures and video as I go. Oftentimes, if I'm going on a long bike ride, for instance, I'll have Google Glass on, partly to see the person who just tried to kill me with his car, but also because
you still wear it. You have one?
Oh yeah. Not every day, but it gets charged up. To be fair, I usually use it with a external battery, like plugged in and trailing to a battery pack someplace else, because the battery life. Yeah, I mean, you can't really wear it on a regular basis. But yeah, there are so many.
And what do you
times
have on the screen? What are you looking at?
Usually, it's just feedback. Sometimes it's navigation stuff if I'm doing something that's kind of challenging. But it's mostly answers to questions such as where is Super Deli
navigation
from here?
That's really
right.
Interesting.
But also I don't know whether I'm meeting someplace at place X or place Y, so I can bring up a calendar. Sometimes I will have a thought and I will slow down at a flat stretch where there's no real traffic and say, take a note, and then create a note. But also, again, sometimes you're just walking around or you're just riding around and you just want to take a picture just to remind yourself of something you saw without having to stop, take out your phone, flip open an app, do something like this. That's not, even though it's only a 30 to 45 second process, that's not the importance of what I'm doing right now. I just want to remember that really cool thing that I saw so I can come back to it later on. So I'm talking about only wearing it maybe twice a month when those situations come up. But I'll also admit that a lot of what I use it for could be taken care of if it's just a simple voice-operated high-definition camera that I can clip to my sunglasses or my regular glasses. But it just goes to show you that there's all kinds of ways to implement this. I don't think that Google Glass is necessarily a failure. I think it was a research project that led to a lot of interesting observations about how we can be using computers, but we can't because we don't have the technology yet.
We may be saying the same thing about HoloLens, too. I mean, I think all of these are just early experiments. Renee, if you could have the perfect Pokemon Go setup, would augmented reality, like a more sophisticated augmented reality, fit into that? Maybe glasses or something?
It's ironic because I was thinking about this because there's Pokemon Go Fest in Chicago this Saturday where there's going to be thousands of people out there, you know, doing same time.
That'd be so fun.
Yeah. I'll be there if there's any MacBreak Weekly listeners there and want to meet up. I will be there all day. But right now there's going to be a lot of people. And I just like this because like I play when I'm out. I go for long walks and it keeps me busy because walking sometimes is very monotonous. And I would love it if I just had sort of like the Google Glasses thing where it just appeared on my glasses and I could see it and I could do air interactions or whatever it was. And I had some sort of wristband that coordinated what I was doing for the computer to disappear. That's what makes it really real. That's what makes it immersive and puts you in that world. And I don't want a VR experience for that because that's a fake world. I just want this stuff brought into my world. I guess I'm lazy like that. I want it all brought to me. And if we could have some combination of AirPods and glasses and whatever it is in your hands or your arms. Maybe your Apple Watch does all that for you. That would be ideal. And not just for Pokemon Go. I mean, that's early stage, like Andy said, really beginning stage of this stuff. But for all the things and all the sort of gaming and all the education and navigation and things to come.
This is cool. It's sold out, unfortunately. Pokemon Go Fest Saturday.
I'm doing the press pass thing, so I'll be there covering the event.
Grant Park.
Yeah.
So this is official. This is sponsored by Niantic, I guess, or And they're going to have special Pokemon that have never been seen before in Grant Park.
It's super interesting because the way it works is that the people at the event will do certain things that unlock things for everyone around the world. So, for example, if you catch more grass types, you'll unlock a Stardust bonus for everyone in the world.
For everybody.
And then the more they, for everybody. But then the more they catch in the rest of the world, the longer that bonus lasts for. So if they, I forget what the numbers are, but
so
if they
everybody catch like 1,000, should do this on Saturday at wherever they are.
Absolutely. And then if they catch enough, it triggers another bonus back in Chicago where you get a mystery challenge, and people are assuming that's going to be like a legendary raid or something.
Oh,
so they're clever
God.
In how they're putting this together.
This is brilliant. Special Pokestops.
They've done this for Ingress in the past, so this is just sort of applying the Ingress game.
I think that was the thing. That they did the exact opposite of Google Glass, which is that Niantic started with something that was fairly geeky. With being Ingress and then, you know, figured out all the details, got a lot of bits and pieces worked out, and then rolled it out to everyone. And I think that's part of why Pokemon's been so successful. I think it would have been hard to do without Ingress.
And lest you think that this is something for, you know, nerdy fanboys, sponsorships on this, Sprint and Boost Mobile are allowing their customers in an hour early. And the host hotels are the Fairmont, the Swiss Hotel, the Kimpton, the Blackstone, the W Chicago, and the Hyatt Regency. This is clearly, this is seen as an upscale event. How interesting.
Oh, when I go to the U.S., because we don't have it here, Starbucks is a sponsor. And almost every Starbucks, you go in and you see this giant picture of a Pikachu latte or whatever it's called.
Wow. Wow. Well, have fun at Pokefest.
Thank you. And I hope there'll be a lot. I saw some Twit listeners are going, so I hope there'll be a lot of them.
Oh, great. Well, look for Renee Ritchie.
Yep, I'll be out there. And they want the press. Like, it's funny because the press thing is, like, they're going to immerse you. They want you to have the whole experience. So
oh, yeah, we'll and this is why they're doing it. They want the press, obviously. I mean, it's...
It sounds like he's, like, an embedded press in a military operation.
You're going to get the special helmet, the whole thing, yeah. Just stay out of the line of fire, Richie. We don't want to hurt anybody.
I might like escalate the geekiness because I wonder like if it'll be like mainstream press in me. Like the Wall Street Journal sends like a very traditional reporter, and I'm out there just like duck rolling and diving to the bushes. What kind of looks that I'll get might be funny, but I'll regret nothing.
Oh, Renee, I do own like an actual like tactical press vest that I haven't used in like 5 years. It's adjustable, but I would love to have a picture of you wearing this at this event, like as a combat reporter.
But I'm just thinking like we're going to have GPS running all day, data running all day, the screen on all day. So I'm bringing like two of those giant multi-packs, a bunch of cables, just everything imaginable for like long-term embedding.
Wow.
And a trenching tool, a shelter half, five days of rations in case you get caught.
A pith
helmet, satellite phone.
This is
I'll be like
be
Alex
amazing.
When he's about to assemble a video rig.
Yeah. Wow. This is gonna be
Al
totally
Franken,
amazing.
One man mobile news unit.
Now, apparently, the concern is that Grant Park is not known for its data. Like, apparently, it's very bad cell signal, and the Wi-Fi has a low cap. So hopefully, they're reinforcing all that.
Oh, I guarantee
right
you,
now.
They're gonna be there'll be trucks out there and all of that. Yeah. Wow.
Hopefully.
Wow. Did you see Georgia Dow's Magikarp hat?
Yeah.
She wore that on Twitter on Sunday. She has a hat that's a Pokemon.
Yeah. I have a Tyranitar one, but I don't have it with me, sadly. Her son stole it from me.
Our show today, this is great. I love it. Our show today brought to you by WordPress.com. I am a thrilled and very happy customer. For years, I used WordPress self-hosted. And I'll be honest with you. I was spending more time, you know, tweaking the software, updating the software than I was actually blogging. And I'm thrilled to go to WordPress.com because it's hosted. So that means WordPress runs it. You're on their servers. They keep you up to date. There's a great community there. It's all the WordPress you love, but much easier to use. Create your stunning website, whether it's a personal blog, a business site, or both. at wordpress.com/MacBreak. You don't have to have any experience. It's easy to do. They have hundreds of themes to get you started. You pick a template, you make it your own. But if you're a pro, of course, the developer platform is phenomenal. I'm using my my template is 2017, which is easy to remember, because I wanted full bleed images from our show. So I have a kind of a rotating series of images. And then I post my articles here. And I just, it's so nice to be back on WordPress. It just works so well. All your, you see the links to the social media, all my tweets are automatically imported, as are my Instagram images. When people visit one of my pages, read one of my articles, they can share it easily. They can comment on it easily. WordPress has great anti-spam filtering. They're very famous for that. And you see how easy it is for them to share it on Twitter or Facebook or Google or like it. And it can get you up on the front page of WordPress.com, which means you're going to get a heck of a lot more traffic. It really is the best way to host your content. I want you to go to WordPress.com/MacBreak. We're going to give you 15% off your new website. Find out why 28% of all websites run on WordPress. Many of the biggest publications in the world are running on WordPress. WordPress.com/MacBreak. I'm a tip of the hat to all the WordPress guys, the people at Automattic, I Mount Mullenweg. I love WordPress. They made great stuff, and it's just getting better all the time. WordPress.com/MacBreak. It's my home on the internet. You should consider making it yours. And by the way, my blog is at leolaporte.com. You'll notice HTTPS automatically added. What else? Oh, I get AMP. Yeah, that's us in the Acropolis.
There you go. That's a sofa table photo.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know what? I did order books from my last trip. I got Google Photos book. And the Google Photos books aren't particularly slick. You can't add text and stuff. But their claim, you know, their differentiator is that they use AI. So you just say, make a book, and it will automatically pick images. So your book is kind of done. You can just tweak it if you want. And I actually got a very nice book. The printing's very good. Yeah, I tried it. Another company called ZNO. I brought these in on iOS today, that does lay flat books for pros. They're beautiful.
And, yeah, those are gorgeous.
Yeah, really nice job. I've got to do one with Apple Photos, though. I promise I'll do that. So I'll compare them. Do you guys ever make books?
I used to do them once a year for people.
Yeah, I made my first Google Photos book just to try it out, and it just reminded me of how cool it is to, like, photos I've been looking at, like, for years and years and years, but when you have them just, like, on an actual book that you can flip through, maybe it's just because I'm of that generation that grew up with paper books. That's like, look, legitimacy, isn't it cool? I can see these things at such wonderful resolution and stuff.
Yeah, I have to say I like it. Let me just show you, So I had.
I'm sorry. WordPress. I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
No. We're done with WordPress. We've moved on. Okay. I had. I'd made this just for sharing, and we did a shared photo album. So Lisa's pictures are in here along with my pictures, and then you put in maps and captions and stuff like that. So this became like the full blown every picture that we cared about from our trip. And then if you want to make a book, it's a really easy thing to do. You just go to create photo book. And then you choose $10 or $20. I actually made a hardcover, but that only gives you 20 pages for that price. You're going to pay for additional pages. I'll make a soft cover. Yeah, but it took 100, right?
It makes you wonder what the internal logic is. Good photo, not good photo, not good photo, good photo, good photo, not good photo.
I'll tell you one thing I noticed, that they like people. So, for instance, on our trip, really, because it's Machu Picchu and the Galapagos, we had a lot of non-people pictures. But they prefer the people pictures. So I added more landscape pictures. But these are all the pics. This is totally automated. And I think that they did a pretty good job. I mean, you might want to add or subtract. They made a 100-page book. But I think they did a pretty good job. And there are animal pictures in here. It's not like they eschew them completely.
It is kind of humbling when... Like this book was not automatically created. I selected like all the pictures in this, and so I thought it came out really well. And then I did another one that I didn't actually print, but I had it automatically generate one. And I can't say that I like the automatically generated one as much as I like the one that took me like hours to put together, or to select photos from. But it's like It disturbs me that this is about 80 to 85% as good. I think it achieves its goal of saying that I want my aunt or my sister isn't really on Google Photos, but I want to share like how good like my holiday was or my Christmas was with my kids. So I'm just going to click one button to have it generate an album, look through it to make sure there's nothing nasty in that, click another button to have it automatically printed and sent to my sister or my aunt. Like, okay, that's pretty good.
I'll tell you what, it's every bit as good as like those albums. Remember in the old days and you get the little squares? I mean, it's every bit as good as that.
When my mom sold her house, we took a bunch of photos from that location and put it together into a book with her because we knew that even though she wouldn't have that house anymore, she would always have that book to look back on, and she really liked it.
How does it – now, part of it is that different companies use different providers. Nobody does it by themselves. They're all going to somebody else.
Tim Cook is not there assembling your book.
Yeah. I think Apple's always chosen very good providers. That's my sense of it.
Yeah. I've printed a couple books with the Apple service, and they've all come out really well. And they are huge crowd pleasers.
Yeah.
So it's always, you know, I took one of my, when my son got born, I took one and sent it to the parents, you know, and sent them a book because my parents were much more likely to, both parents on both sides would be much more likely to look at the book. And also, you know, Carlita and I went out for on a vacation years ago and took it all, and it was great. I put it together. She couldn't figure out why I was getting up early in the morning. I literally put it together during the vacation and ordered it in like a week, you know, a couple of days after we landed, there was a book there of the vacation. And so it's a great service.
If you were a pro, you probably, for instance, wouldn't want to use the Google Photos because the backgrounds are white, right? You might want to use something with a black or gray background, right? Or all full bleed. The ZNO is all full bleed, which is nice. I think Blurb does a very good job as well, but it's a lot harder to create. If anybody's ever done these books, it's a lot harder to make a Blurb book. Lulu will let you do books that you can sell. Does anybody have a strong preference, or just go with Apple? Makes it easy.
I just use I just have all my photos in Apple's photo service. So I use photos, that. If you have all your stuff in Google Photos, then you can use, easier to use that.
Right. Blurb does have an iOS app, or maybe it's a Mac app. Yeah, it looks like it's a Mac app. So at least that would save some time.
I mean, you could do your own printmaking and do this, you know, the real hard way.
Sure.
Just want the easy.
This is so much easier.
Yeah.
So much easier. Apple is, if you live in New York City and you're a Con Ed customer, Apple is doing a test, I guess. I don't know. Apple's HomeKit tied in with Think Eco, Smart AC, and HomeBridge, and you can control your air conditioner. This is an article from Apple Insider.
Colda, Siri. I said Colda.
It's a Con Ed program called the Smart AC program. Always a problem in major metros with the air conditioning. And they just,
I cannot go below 69, sir. I cannot do it. Do it.
Yeah. So if you're a Con Ed customer, the Wi-Fi, you have a window air conditioner, you'll be, and what they're going to send you is a kit that works with Apple's HomeKit. Just a public service announcement from this station and the Advertising Council.
And when it works with ARKit and HomeKit, then it'll be fun.
That would be cool.
You know, definitely the way we use electronics in houses is incredibly inefficient when you start actually measuring all of those things. And so there is this revolution that's coming that keeps track of all of that and makes sure that nothing that doesn't need to be running is running. And so I think that makes a lot of sense. And trying to figure out a way to take, rather than just replace everybody's air conditioners with something smarter, figuring out a way to turn them on and off does seem to make sense. You know, I guess my question when I read that was, are they, do you just leave the air conditioner and just tell it to go to 50? You know, like just always, you know, what I'm saying is the air conditioner is always on, and then the phone or the device then decides what temperature it is.
Right.
It seems like you just want to set it as low as it can go.
Right.
So that it just, when it turns on, it just goes, okay, I'm on. And then I get to 68 degrees or 72 degrees or whatever. I think they suggested 74. I was like, what house have you been?
That's not air conditioning.
That's air normalizing.
Well, if it's 98 outside with 100% humidity, 74 is probably pretty nice.
Yes. Yeah, that's a problem with the setup of the app, Alex. There's, unless you choose height, weight, male, female, or orchid. I think you have it set to orchid. If you set it to one of the human types.
Exactly.
Refrigerated.
NASA spent a lot of time. NASA spent a lot of time figuring this out, and I think it's 64 degrees.
Yeah.
Set it by Kelvin.
I guess Con Ed has had in the past programs that let them control the AC. Omega Project's telling us in the chat room is when his father began to suffer from Alzheimer's, he authorized Con Ed to control his AC. He said when there were power supply issues, you know, when the grid got overloaded, he said it got to 102 degrees in his bedroom. So that's just turning it off, I think. Mismanaging it, yeah.
What's interesting now in California is that we're, you know, of course, we're in an issue where we're making too much power. We're literally paying other states to take our power off the grid because of solar in a lot of ways. And it's cheaper to turn solar off and right. scale down than it is to turn natural gas off or coal off or whatever. So I think it's fascinating that we may be able to start reacting because on really, really hot days, there's a high probability that we're going to be generating a lot of solar electricity at the same time. Not always, but I think that's going to be a interesting thing where we're actually, our power supply is actually reacting to the environment as opposed to just trying to work against it.
Yeah. Apple wants every hospital patient to have an iPad, not for entertainment, but for their vitals. This is an article by Sarah Burr in TechCrunch. She says she went down to take a tour of Cedars-Sinai's pilot programming. It allows patients direct access to their vitals, their care team, and educational tools through the iPad. Interesting. Yeah. There are other hospitals already using it, including the Jacobs Medical Center at UC San Diego, Metro South Medical Center in Chicago. Cedars-Sinai has been doing this for a year. They have their custom software, MyCS Link, which allows patients to look up their information online, including notes from their doctors. So this is kind of cool. It also, according to Cedars, reduces errors, transcription errors or doctor error.
I had a relative in hospital last week that I was visiting a lot, and it was not good. Like the surgery was good, but the post stuff, they gave them a packet of recommendations, and the recommendations were wrong. It said, you know, don't eat anything. And they're like, oh, that's outdated. We want you to eat something. And it said, don't do this for 3 days. And it said, no, that's wrong. It's 2 days. And they never corrected it. And they never, there was different nursing staff that gave them different instructions. They said, well, we're not going to give you pain meds until you ask for them. Another one said, well, we're supposed to be giving it to you. And it was just a mess. And I can't help but think, because I have a relative who works in a hospital that is all in on, they have iPhones, iPads, and Apple Watches. And it seems like that system is in way better harmony, is way more up to date, and actually does better informed consent and better patient empowerment than any of these sort of old, outdated. This hospital I went to last week didn't even have Wi-Fi. And it's, you know, I don't know, you know, 2017 now. So I can't help but think that this is a great way to just sort of empower everybody in that process.
In the neonatal unit, the preemies who are not able to visit with their parents because their immune systems aren't complete are baby timing. They're using FaceTime for parents to visit with their newborns if they're sick or premature and have to be kept isolated.
Yeah, I mean that's such an the importance of having access to the internet and a device in the room is just if you've never had a family member who's had like a serious illness like that. I mean, my dad was had a stroke and was in the nursing home for a year and a half. That was a few years ago, but the ability for me to bring in a computer that had my own like AT&T Wi-Fi dongle on it. And so he can still visit his friends and visit his family, even though they can't come 300 miles to come see him. The ability to a friend of mine was also telling me about how one of the best things he bought for the room of one of his best friends who was had a terminal illness was an Amazon Echo, because she couldn't get out of bed. She couldn't really operate things, but she could simply say, hey, Alyosha, play my Beatles albums. And now she's listening to her Beatles music instead of whatever is on Fox News on the television set that's bolted to the wall up in the corner.
That's true. Having that, you know, lockdown TV is
so we're talking about the importance of having patient records and having notes from medical professionals between them and also between the patient to be important. But we're also talking about this is a window to the outside that people who are in the hospital desperately need. It's a non-trivial problem. I was talking to the folks at that nursing home saying, well, if you'd like, I will buy you Wi-Fi gear so that you can have visitors.
Yeah.
And they said, and they they sent it up and down and up and down, and they said that they would love the donation is great, but the amount of money they'd have to spend to certify that
they're
not introducing a vulnerability to
exactly.
And that's another reason why sometimes one database that's used to track medications is not allowed to talk to another database that is for instructions to patients, instructions to other people, because one is an old database that hasn't been certified. The other one is new and it's perfectly good. So it's not about people not getting it, but it really is. At some point you have to get rid of the asbestos, even though it's a huge problem. Similarly, the internet infrastructure, as Renee is saying, at some point you have to recognize that this is affecting patient care. This is affecting outcomes of surgery and healthcare. And at some point you have to say, okay, we have to do a full audit. We got to find whatever money we have to find in order to make this happen.
Interesting article in Apple Insider about, it's Adblock, the developers of Adblock. Actually, I guess this was originally from Mac Rumors. So let me give credit where credit's due. Mac Rumors, FutureMind, which makes Adblock, ad blocking program for the iPhone, had their app rejected by the review board because, according to FutureMind CTO Thomas Kopersky, Apple's no longer allowing VPN root certificate-based ad blockers to be sold in the App Store. After submitting an appeal to the App Review Board, a member of the review team contacted me directly by phone and informed me that Apple has officially changed their policy regarding VPN root certificate-based ad blockers. The officially allowed ad blocking method is now Safari content blockers, and that's it. Actually, I don't think that's a bad move.
I don't think that was new either. I mean, they've been blocking things that were potentially it's, again, the potential for abuse of these things.
Right.
And once you start using VPNs, and they can sort of man in the middle anything that they want to do.
That's the real problem.
It
becomes a man in the middle possibility. Exactly right. If you're using Safari and on an iOS device, why wouldn't you just download one of the Safari?
And some of them have been bought and are owned by countries that may or may not have your best interest in mind, and they insert their own ads instead of the ads that they're blocking, and it's... and they can change dynamically. So it's not like they can say, okay, you're a good one. That good one could become a bad one with a flip of a server switch.
Right. There are more things you can do with VPN-based content blockers, but it does require a man in the middle, in effect. And that's a fair trade, I think. Less effective ad blocking, but more security.
I think the Safari content blockers, they're more than just ad blockers. You can set them to, if you don't like web fonts, for example, if web fonts are draining your data and you're in a data-starved area, you can say block. There's all sorts of things you can do with them, and I think they cut out the majority of what you'd want to cut out with an ad blocker anyway.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think this is a very sensible decision. Free Beats. Free Beats are back.
Free Beats, baby.
Free Beats, Borscht baby.
For everybody.
If you're going back to school, you get a choice. If you buy a Mac or an iPad Pro, you get a choice of a free pair of Beats Solo 3, Beats X, or Power Beats 3 headphones. If you're a student, a parent of a student, or an educator, if you buy the Mac with education pricing for a limited time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They've done this every year, right, in the back to school.
Well, since they bought Beats, right?
Right, since they bought Beats.
It's a convenient thing to do. Forget what it was before Beats, was it?
An iTunes gift card or something like that. I forget what it
was. I think
it
has been, yeah. Starts, it's already on, and it ends September 25th, 2017. Started last week. You do have to verify. So, you know, don't try to trick them to get your free headphones, kids.
No such thing as a free Beats lunch.
That's not
or
okay.
At least trick them into giving you better headphones than Beats. If you're gonna steal something good. Steal something with some treble.
iOS 11 beta 2 came out for the public beta. If you I didn't notice a lot of differences. Frankly, I thought beta 1, the first beta, was very stable. One thing that's new is it's one thing that we talked about on iOS today is in this new content switcher thing. Before you had to press and hold to delete recents. Now you can just swipe them away like the old days. Yeah.
It's the same as developer beta 3. So if people are running developer beta 3, it's essentially the same as public beta.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, okay. I assume that we're one behind on the public
beta. No, you're at the same. You're in the same. It took longer to get the first beta out. So 3 dev is 2 public.
Okay. Okay. And as, have we gone to 4Dev?
No, not yet.
No, so we're all at parity now. I'm as good as any YAM developer out there. What else
is... they test it with developers. If we don't scream, then they put it on the public.
Right. What else is new in the, in this new release? Anything else I should...
I start to lose track of what's new, but there are things like some of the stuff that people are noticing, for example, is you can no longer do the 3D touch to swipe backwards. And I don't know if that's because it's hard to implement on an unannounced products that are coming our way in September. So it's just either gone or under redevelopment. Right. There's also, you can also, there's a button for what's using the storage on your iPhone you can look into. And there's all sorts of really neat little touches on it.
Apparently you can stack selections. Effin Dunn saying, okay, grab one, hold it, then tap others.
Yeah,
oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say that I'm pleased to see that Apple is responding to the user feedback in this beta, because I think that was one of the big complaints about the new control center is you couldn't swipe away. And so that's showing that it's not so done that they can't make minor tweaks.
Yeah, and they did that before, like when iOS 7 came out and it was just incredibly too light. They made it a little bit beefier. Now they've gone, I think, sometimes a little bit too bold in the new version.
Right.
But they're definitely...
I didn't like that super thin stuff, I have to say.
No, it was way too thin.
A little more legible. We should mention that probably the reason that Apple didn't make it that easy to remove recents is because there's really no point in doing it. Apple automatically is shutting things down in the background, you know, pretty quickly.
And also, those are Spaces now. Those are supposed to be like the Mac version of Spaces, where you have these desktop arrangements that you created. So you always use Safari and Notes, for example, and you always use maybe Messages and Slack. And so it keeps those popular arrangements for you, so you can go back to them without having to rebuild them each time.
But don't worry, they're not running in the background.
No, it has a thing called Jetson, which is a process that goes through and destroys things that are requiring too much resources in the background. Mm.
As it should.
I got to say, you guys got me tempted, are tempting me into installing this latest beta on my 12.9.
I would say at this point, if you have a Pro, I can't think of a good reason not to. I mean, I presume, well, I can think of a couple. One is...
any beta is potentially dangerous.
Yeah. There's always that risk, but there's also some apps that won't work anymore.
I guess I feel like with my Pro, I feel like this is the moment when I bought it. I haven't really put a lot on it that I'm worried about. This is the time to play with it.
Yeah.
So I just have the beta running.
Actually,
and, it just gives me an opportunity to run with it.
It's great how the brain will let you do whatever, will justify whatever it is you want to do. Because I'm thinking the exact opposite, saying I use my MacBook, I use my iPad Pro every single day. It's my productivity thing, and these are features that increase the productivity features of the 12.9, so I should definitely be using these things. I'm going to install the beta because the iPad
that's
Pro
why
is
I
such an important part of my workflow.
It's made for the Pro, and I wanted to see these new features, and I have to say, at least for me, it's stable enough. I suppose there are some people who might suffer data loss.
I got some apps.
iOS beta 3 on my phone has been worse than beta 2. On my iPad, it's been fine, but on my phone, it's been worse. And again, because there's just so many different settings, and it really is butterfly effect now, where it depends on so many different little things you have on every device that it's hard to guess in advance.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if I'd recommend it for the phone. I think really the strongest argument is to do it on a iPad Pro, because you want to take advantage of those features in the iPad Pro.
Also, a bit of perspective, if my iPad locks up, oh no, I'll have to use my notebook. If my phone locks up, that means that I can't get I can't use Lyft to get home. I can't call somebody. I can't for an emergency. I can't get into my banking app to make an important transfer or fund. Yeah, so be really paranoid.
Not
about
this
phones.
Year, but last year at WWDC, I installed the beta immediately and lost data for, I think, 6 hours until I could fix it. And I was outside. I was just walking the streets of San Francisco, couldn't do anything, just trying to reboot and do everything I could to get data.
Well,
don't be me.
We wondered why it hadn't happened before, but now it has. Apple has apparently hired security specifically to prevent...
Are they real guns?
Drones from flying over Apple Park. This is my last Apple Park video. I'm not sure. I should look and see which one.
Come on, man. Fight the power.
Fight the power. This is Drone One Media's version. He's saying this is my last one because the security guards are coming for us. This kind of makes sense. I was surprised they allowed it at all, but it makes sense that Apple, once people start moving in, really don't want drones flying into the circle.
The TIE Fighter launch phase took a while to get active, Leo.
It is pretty complete looking at this one. All the solar panels are in. The circle is completed. Plantings are, it looks like, completed. There are a few trucks still in the middle finishing landscaping. Even though my hover app gave the all clear and I was across the street from Apple Park, a security officer approached me while I was flying. So, all right. Number five, find out where that drone's coming from. He informed me his job was to spot drones and call the cops on anyone flying them. Yeah, I think it kind of makes sense because you could peer right into somebody's window at this point. Once there are people in there.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't know this situation. I've been in situations like that as a photographer, and it took me a few years to. Yeah, he was nice and so. Okay,
you let me land my drone and leave without contacting the authorities.
I've been in New York City and taking pictures of beautiful architectural sculptures on the sides of buildings, and someone looks and a security guard comes and says, "Sir, we're going to have to ask you to not take pictures of the building." I said, "You can ask, but I'm sitting."
That's a building that's in public, but this.
And I'm sitting on a sidewalk, and it got negotiated down to, can you at least like. If I write a note saying that I told you to go away and you didn't, so I can show my bosses I did my job. So long as I'm hope he's making the decisions that are right for him. I'm not saying what he should or shouldn't do.
I think it there's would be no question it's illegal to fly a drone over this building.
I don't know what the law is. Yeah. I would be interested in somebody deciding that here is what we can legally do to film this campus, and I'm going to keep within that. If they want to call the cops, then eventually the cops will get tired of being called out and being by someone who has, great, here's my lawyer's number. He will explain to you what the FAA's regulations are. This is a registered drone. I'm flying it within the ceiling that is allowed. There is no airspace restrictions above this facility. And if you tell me that there are ones that I'm not aware of, then I will obey that as well. But you're not going to tell me to not be on the sidewalk doing what I can legally do.
No flying drones over people, according to the FAA.
Yeah, he's in the middle of a city, so that's... I know that's a problem.
Yeah. You know, presuming he's not actually on private property, that wouldn't be the issue. But the drone, and so there would be certain altitude limits, I'm sure.
Right.
But exactly. I completely understand why a company does, or even anybody, doesn't want drones peering in their windows.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
He was changing between a meeting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of proprietary stuff going on here.
Yeah. My problem would be if someone suddenly they decide that just like that guy who rented a Cessna to find out, I wonder if Chris Christie took his family out on this officially closed state beach.
Right.
If someone wants to rent a helicopter and obey FAA rules, that's Apple's fault for not putting a roof on top of things that they want to keep private.
Right.
This isn't like somebody undressing in their apartment. This is a corporation that's doing things for selfish reasons.
So it just depends what the airspace requirements are.
Yeah.
Because obviously you could fly a plane over it. I mean, that's not illegal.
Yeah. Have we learned anything about what improvements Apple might have made to local infrastructure? Like, are they making it easier for people to not have to drive a car into work? Are they investing in the local community?
You know,
the irony is
that it was the city of Cupertino that required them to put in all those parking spaces.
Yeah.
Not Apple. And I would imagine that Apple's very interested in getting as few cars in those spaces.
I did hear rumors about how you're going to do internal navigation. Because I was wondering, like, if Leo and I were at Apple HQ,
how would we get around?
3 degrees north, third ring, fourth floor. But I understand they're color coded, so you'll know.
I think they should have lights in the floor that light up. I've been to events. Yeah, I've been to events where they project your path and they say follow the red line.
But they'll have just so many people walking around. Like, how's Craig going to storm into the meeting if there's like.
Any predictions about when the phone event will be?
September.
Yeah,
I think it'll be still September.
It's usually
I think early Apple, September, I think Apple could just show people how crazy, you know, Apple users are and just say, here's the deal. We're going to release something on September 22nd. They should just tell you this on September 10th and just say, if you want to get in the front of the line, just order it right now. Here's blank number one, blank number two, blank number three. And you can just order it right now. And I guarantee.
Door number one, door number two, door number three.
It'd be like 20. No, like we're just going to device number one. Like literally, I think Apple could sell 20 million of device number one. Like you just like, you know, that's, and they can say, there's only one of them. It's going to be the best one. It's going to cost you $1,200. And you can order it right now. And you can be, you know, we don't have a lot of them. so you don't really have to be committed. And you know, I think that many.
It'll be like Kickstarter. You can get it for $5,000 with a signed picture of Eddie Q.
Exactly. I don't think you need the signed picture. I mean, I think Eddie Q's a great guy.
I think
you get to be in the front of the line, and if you just order it without even knowing what it is, I think that it would be an interesting experiment.
It would be like if it was like Cards Against Humanity, where people didn't believe that when they're selling you a box of crap, they would literally receive a box containing manure. They've just spent money on it.
The funniest it's one like, was on the holiday hole
throw
last
it like
week,
that monkey
year.
On the video.
On the holiday hole last year, you know, you had to give money to keep them digging, you know, into the ground, and all they were doing is digging into the ground. And you know, on their FAQ it said, you know, why aren't you giving my money to charity? And they were like, their answer was, why aren't you giving your money to charity?
Yeah. But yeah, I just remember I wanted to get the what was that Nintendo Mini, whatever, the Classic Edition NES, like last year, like $60. Thank you. A Classic Edition had like about 30 like classic NES games on it. $60. Hey, great. If I find one, if I come across one, I'll buy it. And the fact that they were so in such limited numbers, and you have to make sure you have to know a guy who knows when they're coming in at Walmart. And if you give him $50, he'll set aside some for you. But unfortunately, someone got ahead of you and bought all 100. Now they're flipping on eBay. And there comes a time where you're just thinking, I have money in my hand that I want to use to buy a consumer product. This should not cost me my dignity as well as my $60. You can keep your Nintendo Classic Edition, and I'll keep my $60 if it means that I have to think that, oh my God, I'm one of the chosen few. I got to give somebody $60 and for a consumer product. So I'm glad that that's one thing that Apple has definitely clamped down on, saying we really don't want people camped out in front of Apple stores. We want to have so many in the retail channel that you can just show up and buy one at your leisure. And we want the sort of users that understand that we're not making them for like a week. We're going to be making them pretty much all year long. And if you didn't get it the first day, you can still get it a few days later. Just, you know.
And then according to that video that Megan and Georgia showed, you can pay more money to deny the phone to somebody else.
Yeah.
Because that's a very human thing to do. And then you'll just throw it.
I did have a moment like that, like during the height of the ridiculousness of like the app of the line. I just felt like if I had that kind of money and I wanted to do like a Cards Against Humanity sort of statement, I'd say I'm only allowed to buy two. I only bought the two, and now I'm going to smash them with a hammer. These are physical objects. They're just phones. They're not the key to your happiness for the next month. It means nothing that you're able to buy one of these.
As long as every monkey got cucumbers, it was fine. As soon as one didn't, then they threw the cucumbers at the person.
Yeah.
Just wait.
This is not the Ark of the Covenant. The fact that I broke this open did not release evil spirits that consumed me to hell. It's a phone. Yes. It's a high-end phone.
Hey, but you got to admit, it's a really great phone.
All right, let's take a break. You guys
performed a little bit better in low light. That's all I'm
saying. can we do the emoji before we break, Leo? Because that's just so much fun.
Oh, you want to talk about them? It was World Emoji Day on Saturday. Yes. Apple celebrated doing some fun things, including changing movie names to replace emojis. And they did a replacing movie names with emojis. And they did
emoji podcast.
They did a, this is in the, from the Apple newsroom. Apple previews new emojis coming later this year. These will be part of iOS 11. Scroll down a little bit, Carson. Yes. You get a list of all the emojis. I think there's
still no poutine, which is a travesty, but there are a lot of other really good emoji, like a sandwich. Finally, a sandwich.
Download poutine. All. See other media.
I want the poutine one. I don't even know what I would use a poutine emoji for, but it would be great.
Well, no, I still think you hold down on French fries and you get the option for poutine, tater tots, mashed potatoes, hot. You know, it's just like
any kind of
hash browns, whatever you want.
Potato product. Horrible ones.
They make it in
and out. As always, the real news story about this is the speculation about what What a revolting sex act. Will that emoji be used to convey in the future of things that would get banned in conversation?
You know, I realized that they really
there you
have
go.
Like a secret
yep.
code.
I had some tater tots last night. I'm having tater tots right now, if you know what I mean.
So here are all the new emojis. Apple has kindly provided them for us in high quality vector graphics.
Oh, Mind Blown is so great.
Mind Blown, which is a mushroom cloud coming out of a bursting.
Oh, I will use
happy
that one.
That emoji gives me that emoji feeling.
He doesn't look happy. He looks as though this is like there's a sniper from 2 miles away from the Canadian Force yeah. Special Forces.
It's not pleasant.
I think that looks like my son when I explain to him how cassettes work. He's like, the music is on the thing and it
actually,
turns and he's like,
actually,
whoa.
Seriously, when you scale the Mind Blown things down to like what it will look like, it will look like somebody's been shot and their brains are being splattered out of their skulls.
Here's the throw up emoji. Here's the emoji when you, I don't know what, happens there.
I'm feeling kind of
curious. When you don't know how the reflect on axis command works in Photoshop, that's the emoji for that.
I like Apple's style. These are nice three-dimensional, cartoonish, but still realistic. I think they've done a nice job. There's a zebra.
These would be super expensive clip art. Not too many years ago.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I mean, this is very nicely done.
This is getting like Instagram, or not Instagram, Telegram good. Have you seen all the
stuff? Oh, Telegram is great, I know. Look at the elf queen, Galadriel. Here's a mom breastfeeding. There was some, I remember in the emoji committee issue, about whether that should be gender neutral. And the original version of this, the mom had no head. But that was so creepy. That they decided, well, most of the people breastfeeding are women.
Maybe we're overthinking
this one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys remember the iMessage in iOS 10 demo, but they had Imran Chowdhury on stage demonstrating it. And he was talking yesterday about how he and Steve LeMay designed the original Apple smiley emojis that all this stuff came.
Oh, those are amazing.
Came from out of over burritos was the way that all these came about.
Over burritos.
They shared burritos and they came up with the original emoji set.
A woman
set
in
Apple.
A headscarf, a man with a beard. And I guess these are all of them or something.
Starry-eyed Samage.
This one looks
meditating.
Damaged. Yeah. So, yeah, Apple's – this made a press release out of this, believe it or not. So,
well,
see,
we're not just supposed
to line up for the new iPhone. Now we're supposed to line up for the new emojis. There's no end to this. I'm telling you.
No, but I don't think they were joking when they said that, when they announced new emojis, it's one of the most – like people are just so excited
it's
about them. And it sort of caught them off guard, but now they're fully embracing
it. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, our show today brought to you by the Tracker. Never lose anything again. I have a tracker on my keys, and my keys are chained to my briefcase, so it's doing double duty. And I realized that there's some cameras I would just hate to lose, like my Leica Q. So I put a tracker on that, too. And this is the new Tracker Pixel. One of the nice things is this is so light that it just you don't even know it's there. But what's great is you pair this tracker with your phone. It's a Bluetooth tracker. And if you leave your phone behind, the tracker will scream on your camera, your keys will scream. Or if you leave your camera behind, you can set it up so that your phone will say, Leo, you really don't want to leave your camera at that coffee shop. Plus, you can always check the tracker software on your device to find out where your stuff is. It's just a great solution. And because Tracker has the world's largest crowdsourced network, no matter where your stuff is, you can find it because anytime anybody with a tracker software on their phone walks by your tracker, it'll contact you, say, hey, I saw your camera. It's downtown. I love the tracker. And of course, you can press a button if you wish. You have to set it up. But if you want, you could press a button on your tracker. It'll make your iPhone scream, even if your iPhone is silenced. That's kind of, which mine is. You can also make your tracker scream if you press the button. And this is the Tracker Pixel, which I like because it not only makes noise, 90 decibels of noise, it also lights up the LEDs built in. So a lot of times stuff falls between the cracks in a couch and stuff. It's hard to find. The sound and the lights make it a lot easier. Tracker. You can go right now to thetracker.com and load up on Tracker's the Tracker Bravo, and it's thin, light, anodized aluminum form that's engravable. They also can print on it using UV LED printing. You can have multiple Tracker Bravos on a single phone, up to 10, but you can also have several phones tracking an individual Bravo. So remote controls or shared pets, that kind of thing, that's handy. Tracker's awesome. And right now, if you go to thetracker.com, load up your cart, and use the offer code MACBREAK, you can take 20% off any order. 20% off right now at thetracker.com. Load it up. Get all the trackers for everything you don't want to lose. Travel stress-free this summer with the Tracker. Put it on your luggage. Put it in your passport. Put it on your bikes. Put it on your cameras. Thetracker.com. Don't forget the offer code MACBREAK. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Renee Ritchie, let's get a pick of the week out of you, sir.
All right, so my pick is deliberately meant to start a fight or a controversy. Or so with just the general discussion, not with any person in particular. So there was a bit of a brouhaha last week over 1Password, which is the password management tool of choice for many, many people in our community. What happened was, due to some bad communication on their part, they were hesitant to sort of address the issues. And a lot of people who just took sort of quasi-information and ran with it, there was a lot of people upset with 1Password, a lot of misinformation that got spread, a lot of releases. Sensational headlines. The gist of it is that they are moving towards a subscription model and away from per license pricing. And they're also moving towards a cloud-based model and away from a local password vault. And this has upset a lot of people. First, because some people just want to buy a license when they want to buy it and don't want to pay subscriptions. And especially now that a lot of services have subscriptions, it becomes expensive to sort of have a subscription to every app. And totally understandable. And also some people just don't want to trust their passwords to a cloud-based solution for the same reasons we were discussing with backups.
That was one of the reasons I would often recommend 1Password, because LastPass does have a cloud-based solution. If you want to be responsible for syncing your password blob, if you want to keep it safe yourself, you can with 1Password. I'm sorry to hear
that. That's the thing, is that they didn't change anything.
Oh, they didn't change that.
No, so they are absolutely pushing people in that direction,
yeah,
because they believe
great.
For the majority of people, the majority of time, if you find password managers confusing and the last thing you want to do is maintain a local password database, they will handle all of that for you.
Okay.
But you can still even with the subscription plan, you can still create local password vaults, still keep control of them. They will still sync if you want them to over Dropbox or over iCloud. All of that still works. You can even go to them and get an individual license. I don't know for how long they'll keep doing that, but at least for the foreseeable future, you can still go there and get an individual license.
I always thought it was weird that you pay once for LastPass, for 1Pass. I pay a monthly fee or a yearly fee for LastPass. I'm used to the subscription, and I want them to stick around and continue to develop it. So I always thought that 1Password actually was kind of losing out by charging you once. I'm glad to hear they're doing this.
They absolutely were. They have a really good blog post on this called Happy Password, 1Password Makers, where they figured out that, you know, this is good because they don't have to wait and withhold features to make one big release that they'll hopefully get people to upgrade to. They can sort of put out updates as they have them ready. They don't have to charge you, because before there was a lot of confusion. Like, I own 1Password. Why can't I put it on Windows? Well, yes, you own the iOS version or you own the Mac version. You don't own the Windows version. And it was a lot. Right now, you pay the subscription. You can download it on any device. And we've been using 1Password Teams at Mobile Nations for a long time. And before that, it was horrible. We had like Google Docs and we were sending things over Skype, but it just wasn't scalable. And now we just all have a Teams account and we have that combined with local vaults and cloud vaults. And it's really flexible. But what I was doing is I was trying to figure out what to do for my mom and my sister, because they are those people who do not want to do any overhead for this. They just don't want to manage local vaults. So I got the 1Password's family. I'm in the process of setting that up. And you pay the subscription. It's about $2 more a month for the family version, and you can have up to 5 people. So I have my sister and my mother set up now too, and you can share passwords. So I can share some passwords with them. I can set up their passwords and share them. Like if I need to log into my mom's router or log into her cable and help her fix something, it's all very easy to do. It's 1 gigabyte of storage, which sounds small, but really you're saving tiny
passwords.
Little pseudo rent.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You get every app. So if your mom is on Windows, your sister is on Android, your brother is on Windows Phone, you know, whatever it may be, you get access to all the clients for everybody. And if you have at least one person who's a little bit, you know, and to get 1Password, you have to be a little bit concerned about security. If you have just that one person in the family who's willing to do the initial setup work, it's really transparent and easy to use after that.
Yeah, I use this. There's a lot of advantages to having a blob stored in the cloud and it syncs to all your devices. It is easy. I'm not too worried. I mean, that's the risk with a password manager, is there's a single point of failure. If somebody somehow should get your password vault and get it unlocked, well, now they've got everything. So sometimes people say, well, I don't want to put mine on the cloud. I want to put it on a Synology or do my own thing, encrypt it, and put it on Dropbox, whatever. And I always liked 1Password because it gave you the choice, but it also makes perfect sense that the default is, you know, a cloud storage solution.
And it was the same reason. Like they said, the big one of the biggest problems they had is that people would just forget their master password, or they would corrupt their database, and they would, and there was not literally nothing they could do to help them.
So good. So, I think that's fantastic. I've always liked 1Password.
It's still a good company. It's not owned by anybody. It's still, you know, they're trying to maintain their independence and do what they want to do and make it the way they want to make it.
Yeah. Very good. A good plug. No controversy there. And I'm glad we could set the record straight.
Some people hate it when things change. They just really, like they're used to having it in one way and they really want it one way. And again, there was a lot of confusion because people thought you couldn't do local vaults anymore. And that led a lot of security experts to say, we can no longer recommend this software. Understandable, but I think it behooves all of us when you're an expert that you stop and you actually go talk to them and find out everything beforehand.
Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week.
For my pick, I did find my Boylston Street Green Day, Green Monster Apple Store opening day shirt.
Oh, look at that. Yeah.
And so you see, it's not, it is actually, my camera color is off. It is actually Green Monster green. It's got like the sliding, like manual scoreboard numbers in there. That. And you actually have to flip it over in order to see the actual Apple logo, Boylston Street thing. Unfortunately, this is in the category of it's too cool a shirt to wear.
Yeah.
So that's why it's neatly folded someplace. Yep. And I really need to wear it because sports cars, high performance cars are meant to be driven, and cool T-shirts are meant to be worn. Nothing gold can stay, Pony Boy. My pick of the week, though, is one of my eternal favorite things. This is the GridIt, like packing cable organizing accessory system from Cocoon.
I love it.
Can't tell you. I'm sure that I recommended this 2 years ago, but I was reminded just this weekend of how cool it is. It's just like a grid of elastic straps that are sort of like woven, where some of them are like wide straps, some of them are like tiny, tiny straps. And it means that every time that I switch from like my backpack for the day to my laptop bag for the day to even like the little tiny like Army surplus gas mask bag I sometimes wear, all I got to do is pull this out of whatever bag I was wearing yesterday and put this into the new one, and I've got like my got my USB charger, I've got cables for all the things I use, I got a pen, I got analog headphones, and it's just that simple. And they come in all kinds of sizes. This is the grab it from wherever I go and put into wherever I need to go size. But they also make it in like 8.5 by 11 sizes. So when I pack for a trip, that's one of the banes of my existence, is that I forget. I've oftentimes traveled with like one lightning device and like four lightning cables because I've been packing over the course of a day and I forgot whether I put the cable in there or not. So when you have like the 8.5 by 11 version of it, here is like a tote board showing you everything that you have packed already. And so if I think, oh, I need a USB-C cable. No, Andy, see, you already have a USB-C cable. You don't need another one of those. And it's so easy just to keep things organized and, more importantly, get at things when you need them. And they're pretty cheap. This is the smallest one they have. And this is about $10 or $12. They make 12-inch versions. They make versions that are for like your car sun visor. They even make versions that are actual like iPad cases, but the outside of the case is this GridIt system. So again, you drop this in your laptop bag, you've got your iPad protected, but you got your mints, you got your lens wipes, you got your pocket camera, you got your spare battery for I can't recommend them highly enough. I keep the elastic wears out maybe after a year or year and a half, but you just keep buying more of them because I got like four or five or different ones of these.
Yeah, they're not expensive. Yeah,
they're not expensive, and I don't know of anything that does as good a job for its intended purpose as this thing does.
What size do you, so you have a little one and a medium size?
I have the extra small. This is the 7-inch by 5-inch version, and I also have, I think, the 8.5 by 11 version of it.
It's 10.5 by 7.5.
It's one's a little bit larger than that. Oh, it's okay. Large enough that it's about the same like real estate as a 13-inch laptop. That's the one that I take when I'm going to be gone for like the better part of a week or so, where this is where everything that would ordinarily be rattling around inside my suitcase is going to sit. So it might contain my toothbrush, might contain my razor, and it's the particularly when you need to take things apart because TSA saw something in your bag that need to hand inspect. Like suddenly, here is everything, sir or madam, and then everything's back in there. So
great.
They'll also sell you a kit of three, a bundle of like three different sizes. I'm if you got the dough to spend $50 or $60, I say buy the bundle because you'll get the size that you absolutely need, and then the size you will come to need and depend upon. And then 8 months later, you'll realize I needed a third one. Oh, wait, no, I still have that medium sized one that I never got around to using.
Right. From Cocoon, Grid It. It's on Amazon as well as at the Cocoon website. Mr. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So we've been doing a lot of software development recently, and one of the hard things that I was never very good at is trying to figure out how to keep all those conversations going and keep them working when you're trying to do development. You're finding bugs and you're finding other things that are working and not working. And one of the guys here suggested we start using a thing called Pivotal Tracker, which is Pivotal is. They're kind of, I mean, from what I understand, they're kind of the secret weapon for a lot of companies building apps. And they're in San Francisco.
And it's agile.
Yeah. And so this is, I'm told, is their internal tool that they use for this. So they made more public. And it is awesome. So Pivotal Tracker is, you can work on your phone, works on your web, works on a, on a web page. And what you can basically do is just really, it has all the tools that you need to, if you're a developer, to really just track what's going on. So you can be filing bugs, filing feature requests, keeping track of them. The developers on the other side, our main developer is in San Diego. So he can sit there and work on that. And he kind of works on a shifted schedule. A lot of programmers like to work at night. Right. So I sit there, and a couple other folks here bang on the product, here. And then he is, I see a whole bunch of stuff. And for some reason, there's this lower brain thing that if I see a whole bunch of things that I have to do something with, I have to go up to the app and start hitting it and going, accept, reject, I feel like I need to move it forward. And so, that was more powerful than just using Slack or whatever we were doing before. And so if you're doing development, I would highly suggest taking a look at it. I think I'm scratching the surface of what it actually can do. But it is a super powerful thing that I'm kind of now using every day.
It's an agile Kanban board that lets you track projects. I'm a big believer in this technology. This is how we did our webpage with the folks at Four Kitchens, and it worked very well for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're super happy with it. Nice. It's not very expensive. It's easy to use.
From Pivotal, it's pivotaltracker.com. And that, my friends, concludes this thrilling, gripping edition of Mac Break Weekly. Thank you, Alex Lindsay, for being here. Alex Lindsay's at the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com. Follow him on Twitter at Alex, LINDSAY. That way you can see what he's up to. And there, he announces stuff there, fun seminars and things, especially if you're using Final Cut Studio, Final Cut Pro. You will want to know what he's up to.
We have cleared our current space, so it's mostly empty right now. There's just a big motion capture studio there at the moment, so that we can do some tests. And so once we get that done, we're going to probably do some actually events in this space that we couldn't do when we were doing builds here. So that space has gone somewhere else. So we should be doing some more public events from here in the next month or two.
Great. Thank you, Alex. Mm-hmm. Andy Anako, Chicago Sun-Times, CWOB.com, bicycle rider. Be careful if you see him riding down the road. He's looking in his glass. Do not head into
him. I'm also collecting evidence so that my estate can use against you, so don't get any ideas.
Don't get any ideas, Buster.
I know I look like a dork. You don't have to yell at that. I mean, that's the voice inside my head every single second as I'm pedaling. So don't think you're being so clever.
Andy, you and Alex have convinced me to go the sous vide route, the Prime Day ANOVA. I got it. I did my first sous vide last night. I kind of went a little crazy. Got a chamber vacuum sealer. Got a Burnsall T8000.
Searsall.
No, I got the Burns-O-Matic with the Searsall. I don't know.
But then last night, I had a half-pound cheeseburger that was about an inch thick and with a perfect char on both sides. So that's when I'll take any joking that people will
do. Now, how do you char yours?
On burger, actually, the best way to char is cast iron skillet with like a tablespoon of butter in it. Smoking hot and just like maybe a minute on the side. Yeah. The Searsall works well, but I kind of like the gadget. I like the idea of taking this plumbing tool that I've had for about 10 years and bringing it into the kitchen and just go.
It's really kind of fun.
It's kind
they
of
say
fun
it's also
paint.
Great for lighting fireworks.
Yeah, you can tell yourself it's got a million household uses, but yeah, I will say that it's the cast iron skillet is the way to go though.
Yeah, I think it probably tastes a little bit better. I did my first sous vide last night with chicken breast, and I fired up the grill because I wanted that a little bit of that smoky.
It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it is.
For me, the big green egg is the.
Fired up the big green egg, which is not an inconsequential amount of work, although it's a lot easier to get started with the Benzomatic TS-8000, let me tell you. And then I don't think I really needed the Searsol attachment that goes on top of it, but it is pretty cool. It looks like a shower head, but instead it's infrared heat at 1,000 degrees.
Shoots, a shower head that showers you in violent heat.
I'm going to eat the call.
Renee Ritchie, imore.com. Nice to have you as well. Stay cool.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, right after iOS today. That would be 1800 UTC if you want to stop by. If you want to join us in the studio, as Sean and Lauren did, it would be nice to have you. You can email tickets at twit.tv. You can also watch our stream, twit.tv/live, and join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. See, we have lots of ways to play with us live. But I know most of you don't have time. You're busy. You're working. You want to listen at your convenience. That's why it's a podcast. Use your favorite podcast catcher and subscribe to Mac Break Weekly so you get one every Wednesday morning for your daily commute. Or you just go to twit.tv/MBW. Download it right there. Thanks for joining us. Now it's time to get back to work because break time is over.